Welcome to The Productivity Show, the Agent Efficiency Podcast dedicated to helping you make the most of your time, attention, energy, and focus. In this episode, Brooks and I dive into the topic of energy management. We explain why energy management, and not time management, is the key to taking massive action on your goals, and explore the power of gratitude, showing you how a simple mindset shift can help you become happier and more productive. We talk about why living your life according to the old saying that life is a marathon is actually a very bad idea if you want to achieve your goals. We teach you the mindset you should be developing instead, and share some of our best tips for staying positive. You can find links to everything that we share in the show notes by going to theproductivityshow.com/175. And now, on with the show. All right, today we're talking about energy management, and with me to talk about energy management is Brooks Duncan. How are you doing today, Brooks?
I'm awesome and full of energy. Let's do it.
Great. You've managed it well up until this point, which you're recording in the afternoon Central Time.
Right.
In front of the dojo audience. We try to record these on Tuesdays at 3 p.m. And today we've got a question. Our Ask TPS question is coming from Curtis McHale, who is in the dojo. And he had asked, how do night owls prioritize their tasks compared to early birds? And I'm going to share the official AE position to this. And it's probably going to be a little bit different than the question that Curtis thought he was asking. But we're going to interpret this a little bit different because we believe in the whole idea of biological prime time. But the official AE position on this is that you're always going to get more done early in the day when you've got the most energy, attention, and willpower to invest. And there's a lot of examples of studies and research that shows this. I put one link in the show notes to The Guardian. There's several others and Forbes and Inc. and all those other business magazines that show that the top CEOs all get up super early. And it's because of this principle. And this is why we recommend that you get up early. We've even got a video that we were working on updating this week as part of our sprint on how to start getting up at 5 a.m. in our Finisher's Fastlane product.
I guess it's a bit controversial in a way. There's many people who consider themselves night owls, but I hope they will stick with us and let us. We're not really here to make the case for getting up early necessarily, but allow us to unpack this a little more and talk about how you can translate that into more energy. This isn't a show about getting up early, though.
Exactly. This is one aspect of energy management, but it is important since it's directly speaking to the question that Curtis had asked.
Yep.
And I think that if you were to actually crunch some numbers on this, you would find what Sean McCabe found, and he shared that in TPS 163, where he said that he was a night owl. He used to work after people went to bed because that was when it was quietest. But he started keeping track of what he was able to get done, and then he started getting up early, and he compared the numbers, and he said that he got a lot more done when he started getting up early. And he didn't share the specifics there, but he made it sound like it was pretty obvious that that he was definitely getting more done at the beginning of the day. And I think that that's because of this principle that you've only got so much of this energy and willpower attention to devote to things. And if you wait until the end of the day to do that, then you run the risk of running out of that stuff. Now, obviously, you can kind of leverage this. You can use a time tracking app, for example, Timing, which we've got a discount code inside the dojo. I love this app. It runs in the background on your Mac, and it'll actually tell you when you're most productive. If you were to look back at the data, you can see that, you know, after lunch, when I've had a big lunch and I come back, I don't get a whole lot done. You can use those biological prime times, those ebbs and flows of your energy in order to focus on and accomplish your most important task. But like I said, the problem with waiting until the end of the day to work on your big projects is that even if you are a night owl, you may get to the end of the day and a bunch of stuff happened that you weren't planning on, and now you don't have the energy to work on your most important task because you spent it already.
Yeah, and energy can have a lot of different facets as well, and we're going to dig into this, but you might think to yourself, oh, you know, I'm always alert and ready to go and have a lot of energy late at night, which might be very true, but energy can take different forms. It could be mental energy, you know, maybe something happened during the day that, you know, maybe just upset you or got you thinking, got you unfocused, so now you have to try and put that aside and start working on it, even if you have physical energy.
Yeah, exactly. And you could apply the whole idea of eating your frog to to your own schedule. Like if you're a night owl, maybe you're not eating your frog at 5 a.m, but we still would recommend that you're doing those things, those distasteful things. And that's where the whole idea of eating your frog comes from. It's actually, I first heard about it in the Brian Tracy book called Eat That Frog, but he gets the idea from a Mark Twain quote, which you probably heard us mention over and over and over again on Asian Deficiency, but real briefly, in case you're new to the show, eating your frog, the Mark Twain quote goes that if you eat a live frog first thing every day, nothing worse will happen to you that day. Yeah. And as you apply that to your productivity, it means that those big projects that you tend to procrastinate on, if you just bite the bullet and you just get those things, you put a little bit of work on those things at the beginning of the day, then it doesn't matter what happens the rest of your day. Your day could get completely derailed, but you've already invested the very best of your mental energy, your attention, your focus, your willpower towards the thing that is really important and going to move you towards your ideal future. So you can kind of implement the practice of eating your frog wherever it fits in your own schedule. But the basic premise is that do the things that are really important as early as you can.
Yeah, this stuff always interrelates, because if you're able to structure your day and structure your schedule and take some time thinking about what is that big thing that you need to do. So in this case, it's what we and Brian Tracy call your frog. If you structure everything so you have that, then you can attack it first thing, get it out of the way, and then the rest of the day can be the kind of less important tasks. And like you said, if it falls apart, that's totally fine.
Yep, exactly. There's a habit that I've just started implementing over the last week or two from a book that I'm reading called The Artist's Way. So as this applies to creativity, the habit that I've been practicing is this whole ritual of morning pages, which by definition, you do them in the morning. You do them right away. And you just write stream of conscious 3 pages. So I've got a Baron Fig notebook that I just start writing. And I've found just in doing this exercise for a week or two that I'm getting the results that the author has described I would, where it's kind of like priming the creative pump. And by doing that thing at the beginning of the day, which is a task that honestly a lot of people struggle with, and I've struggled with this myself. You've got, you know, a couple hours at the end of your day, you need to sit down, you need to work on an outline for a podcast or something, and you just hit a mental wall and you can't get anywhere. Well, I've found that by doing these morning pages at the beginning of the day, not only am I actually getting a lot of great ideas from these morning pages, but it makes the whole process of creativity a lot easier as I go throughout the rest of my day. So as it pertains to eating your frog, if you can kind of line these things up where the things that you do first, if those are those most important tasks, if they are in alignment with your big goals and what you want to be able to do, that can kind of be a force multiplier in getting these done. But this isn't really exactly the angle that we want to take for this particular episode. So we'll kind of shift gears here a little bit. But thank you, Curtis, for giving us a question. And if you want to get your own questions mentioned on the show, you can tweet with the hashtag AskTPS and we will answer those on the show. But the basic idea here behind energy management, and really what we're going to dive deep into today, is how do you actually coordinate all of this stuff so that you can get the things done that you want to get done? And one of the quotes that I really like on this topic is by Tony Robbins. He says, "One reason so few of us achieve what we truly want is that we never direct our focus. We never concentrate our power." The way to concentrate your power is to align your time, your energy, and your focus. This is like concentrating the sun's rays through a magnifying glass. And if you can focus it on a specific point, then that's enough to start a fire. Now, we've talked a lot about focus. Other people have talked a lot about time management. So today we want to talk about energy. And Brooks, maybe you can kind of kick us off here. Why is energy management so important?
You always hear people say, "Oh, I don't have time to do this. I don't have time to do that." But really, time is not the most important thing. A lot of times we actually have time. If we shift things around, you can move things, you can free up, get time on your schedule and stuff like that. But you can have all the time to work on whatever is important to you in the world. But if you don't have that energy, you won't be able to follow through and actually do it. I've had this situation in the past where, you know, and this is especially true if you work from home, so you don't have that distractions around you necessarily. But there's been times when I could have all day to work on something, but because I hadn't been managing my energy, not very much actually happened. So that's one really big reason why energy management is so important.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of touched on this a little bit, but you kind of hit it on the head there. Like, you can have time to work on your project, but just because you have the time available doesn't mean that you're going to follow through and actually do it. You need to have the energy in order to do that too. And this is where night owls in particular, I think that there's a big danger zone here, because maybe you've got a 9-to-5, a normal job. Okay, you get home from a long day at work, you think you're going to work on your side project after your kids or your significant other goes to bed. And really what you're doing there is you are enabling procrastination. You're saying, I'll just work on that later. But by the time you're able to work on that project later, the temptation is just to zone out in front of the TV or check your social media. And this is why, like we mentioned earlier, we advocate the whole idea of eating your frog. Your energy is limited no matter when your day starts. So give the very best of it to your important projects at the beginning of the day when you have the most willpower available.
Even if you don't have a quote unquote side project, even if it's just some big project at work in your office, and maybe it's that important versus urgent thing. Maybe it's a project you want to work on, but it's not urgent. What'll often happen, you'll think, I'll work on that, maybe after lunch, but then, hopefully I'll have time in the afternoon. But of course, either that time never happens, or more likely, you don't have the energy later. So you just think, okay, well, I'll push that off to tomorrow. And next thing you know, this thing that you said you would do or wanted to do, you've been pushing off for 2 weeks and it never actually, or 2 months and it never actually happens.
Exactly. Think of energy as a currency that you have. So we've talked about budgeting, every dollar has a job. The basic idea there is that you have to tell your money where to go, because at the end, if you wait till the end of the month to save whatever's left over, you're not going to have anything left over. Okay, we've talked about the same principle with your time. You need to put the things that are important on your calendar so you actually carve out the time for those things to happen. And then your energy, I mean, you've got only so much when you begin your day. What you have available to you throughout any given day is limited, and slamming a 5-hour energy at 3 p.m., contrary to what the commercial might tell you, is not going to be the magic pill that's going to make everything a lot easier. Now, there is a little bit of, there's some good news. There is some light at the end of this tunnel, though, because we want to unpack this whole myth of that life is a marathon. If you view the world through the lens of life as a marathon, it would be easy to say, well, I'm going to push through and I'm going to make sure that I spend tomorrow's energy today in order to get this thing done that I need to get done for work or whatever. But if you view the opposite of that mindset, which we're going to talk about in a little bit, you recognize the problem with that. You're stealing from tomorrow to pay for today. It's the same idea with budgeting. You're just racking up bills on your credit card, but eventually you're going to have to pay that bill. And so the flip side of this life as a marathon mindset is life as a series of sprints. Okay, but first let's talk a little bit about life as a marathon, because this is, I firmly believe, this is evidence of the fixed mindset that we talked about. I think it was in TPS 171. And it's someone who has this fixed mindset of life as a marathon. What they're going to do is they're going to hold back their energy and they're going to try to pace themselves because there's no finish line in sight. And the emphasis here is on managing your time, considering that downtime is wasted time. But like we talked about, the problem here, especially for night owls, is that you can have time at the end of your day, but if you've already gone through your energy budget by the end of the day, you're not going to follow through and do those things. And now all of a sudden you've fallen behind, and those things that you were supposed to do today, now you've got to do them tomorrow, and you feel like you're behind, and it just compounds and you never feel like you can catch up.
Yeah, this is something we hear a lot from people in the Asian efficiency community when they're getting started on working on this stuff. This is the number one thing we hear. I've got a million things on my to-do list. I don't know what to do. I never have the time or energy to do it. And a lot of it is because there's this thinking that they need to spread everything out, and they need to just try and apply equal energy to everything and get it all done. But it doesn't really work that way.
And if you don't start well when you have this view of life as a marathon, you can quickly get discouraged because you see the finish line way, way out there. You see everybody else who's already in front of you, and you kind of think to yourself, whether you actually say this or not, you are thinking it at some level, what's the point? Why even try? But when you have this view of life as a series of sprints, this is the evidence of the growth mindset. All you've got to do is beat yesterday. All you've got to do is do the very best that you can today. You manage your energy the best you can, but you don't try to hold anything back. You just sprint, you give it all, and then you build in the buffer to recover. And because that recovery is important, that downtime is actually considered productive time. And honestly, this is something that I struggle with. I think anybody who has big goals, the tendency is going to be to view that downtime as time that you could be working on something. But when you have this life as a series of sprints mindset, this growth mindset, you recognize that you need to give yourself the time to refill the tank and recharge.
Yeah, this is one area where I feel like productivity gets a bad rap. Is there's this mindset that productivity is trying to get more done, get more work done, make every single minute of your day productive. But it's not really about getting more stuff done necessarily. And like you said, filling up your calendar every second with things to do is not what productivity is about. It's about, you know, actually accomplishing the big goals, and you gotta have downtime. That's why a lot of things we advocate, it has that built into it, because you just have to do it.
Yeah, I'm glad that you called that out, because you're right that this is definitely something that if you don't really understand what is being said here, you can easily apply this the wrong way and get negative results. Merlin Mann, who really came up with the whole idea of inbox zero, like, he hates being associated with the term because people have just abused it. And they think that inbox zero is spending 6.3 hours per day dealing with email, but having zero messages at the end of the day. And he's just like, no, that's not what it means at all. And I think the same thing can be said about productivity. Like you said, it's not just doing more things. I think it was Peter Drucker. I think I mentioned this actually in the last episode. He said that nothing is so pointless as to do efficiently that which should not be done at all. And yeah, this is something that, like, you really have to understand. And it's a reason why we changed the slogan for the podcast. It used to be do more and be better. But I totally understand now, I guess, after thinking through this and seeing some of the feedback, how that could be interpreted wrong. Because if you just view it short term, do more and be better means just do all the things. But that's not really what we were saying, but that's our fault for not being clear also. Like, do more, be better. We're taking the long-term approach. We're talking about how do you get to your ideal future quicker? It's by doing the right things the right way, doing them consistently, managing your energy so that you can consistently do the things that are going to get you to your ideal future.
Katie in the dojo says, my life, constant guilt, because there's always something you should or could be doing. It's hard to reinforce that rest is something you should do too. And yeah, it's not something that comes naturally to many of us.
Yep. Yeah. And Curtis says, that's why I prefer the word effective over productive. The right things, not more. In fact, most often less, but better. Yep. Yep. Exactly. That's the exact thing. And there's a great example of this. Somebody that our U.S. listeners at least are probably familiar with, Teddy Roosevelt. He's got a pretty interesting story, because as a boy, he suffered from asthma and he was frequently too sick to even go outside. So if he had a fixed mindset already, even as a young boy, like, he's weaker than everybody else, all of his peers. He can't do the things that they do. Like, he can't even go outside a lot of the times. So I can totally see how he would develop a fixed mindset and just be like, well, I guess this is my lot in life. You know, this is all that I've got. I got to make the most of what I have. But fortunately, he had somebody in his life, his father, who told him that he needed to decide to overcome his weakness. His father had a growth mindset. So he challenged Teddy and he started physical training, even boxing. And he not only overcame his physical weakness, he used this tenacious growth mindset to overcome just about every obstacle that he encountered. He ended up being an author, an explorer, a soldier, a naturalist, the 26th president of the United States, which is not bad for someone who started off sicker, weaker, and more frail than just about every single one of his peers.
Yeah, that's that's a pretty intense and big example. But I'm sure a lot of us, if we think of somebody, it's we can think of somebody that we've known or maybe in our community that has been that way, that had some sort of obstacle, but managed to make the most of whatever they did have in order to accomplish pretty impressive things.
Yep, exactly. And Lisa's talking, part of this is identifying what is the most important and letting the rest go. I absolutely agree with that. I also think that part of this is in how you approach what you have to do. I know that in the past, I personally, I've had to do some things that maybe I didn't want to do. And anybody who has worked a job, they know what that feels like. But you have two options at that point in how you respond to that. You control your attitude. You can either respond to it negatively or you can respond to it positively. And one of the sayings that I really like from an author named Ed Cole said that your attitude determines the altitude at which you live your life. And what's great about your attitude is that you get to determine it at any point. So no one can force you to have a negative attitude. Your circumstances can kind of lead you that direction, but you can stop all of that momentum. You can say, no, I'm going to stay positive. And that's going to lead us into this whole idea of the energy quadrant. Now, this comes from the Dynamics of Engagement. It's a chart that's in The Power of Full Engagement, which is a book by, I misspelled his name, I think it's John Lear, or maybe it's Jim Lear and Tony Schwartz. I'll have to look that up. We'll have the link in the show notes. But basically, there are two axes for how you are spending your energy, high versus low energy, and then positive versus negative energy. But if you look at this chart, there's really four different energy zones. So I'll just run through these quickly, and then maybe Brooks, you can weigh in on this. So there's high positive energy. This is your performance zone. This is the ideal state for taking massive action on your goals and creating the future that you've always dreamed of. And this is the quadrant that the authors would describe as being fully engaged. And then there is the low positive energy or the recovery zone. And this is where you recover so that you can sprint again in the performance zone. Okay. And this is known, the authors refer to this as being strategically disengaged. Now, there's also high negative energy. This is the survival zone. And probably everybody has been here at one point where you're just completely overwhelmed with everything that you have to do. And then there is the low negative energy zone or the burnout zone. And this is dangerous. You want to get out of here as fast as you can.
Yeah, this is really interesting. And a lot of times people get stuck going back and forth between all these different zones. It's not, you know, usually have people who are a type, right? A high positive energy type, a low positive energy type. A lot of times we're kind of bouncing in between them depending on the situation. But the key is kind of, okay, recognizing when you're in some of the less desirable zones and figuring out ways to move into the better ones, quote unquote, better ones.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I know that initially there will be some people who will look at this and say, well, that's just not my personality. And I tend to disagree. I myself am very introverted, but I know from experience that I've, for example, for a while was really into sports. Everybody has something that they get excited about. You know, everybody's a fan or a fanatic about something. And so you do have those times when you have high energy. Now, the problem is that a lot of people will get stuck going back and forth between high positive energy and high negative energy. And that is exactly what we were talking about earlier, where people are just being busy when you've always got more to do. They're not strategic or they're not intentional about refilling their tank, and you can't just stay here. Eventually, you're going to crash.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I've had an example with that recently where we're working on a project, doing a bunch of updates to one of our products. And so there's been a lot of moving parts and a lot of things, and none of them are that difficult per se, but there's just a lot of things to do. And some days I've gone through periods in that high positive energy where I'm just sitting there, you know, head down, headphones on, just cranking. I just can't believe how much I was able to do. But then at the same time, if I am not careful in that zone, all of a sudden I find myself going into that high negative. Thankfully, I try to recognize this as much as possible, where all of a sudden I'm looking, okay, I'm like, okay, I've done all this stuff. That's awesome. But oh my gosh, look at all this other stuff that needs to be done. And I'm, you know, traveling soon and blah, blah, blah. And then it kind of goes into that high negative situation as well. So we can all shift really quickly.
Or completely hypothetically, your podcast co-host shows up and says, hey, I need you to record an episode with me this afternoon.
Yeah,
that seems to me like the prime time to go into the high negative energy. But I'm glad that you didn't. and I will say that the less that you understand the why behind the things that you are doing, the more you can tend to shift towards this high negative zone. So one of the things that I really respect about Asian efficiency is that we have a very clear why dictated by our core values for everything that we do. I mean, we even talked about it today with the avatars, the people that we're trying to serve, and having the picture of who we're creating content for, that can be enough to keep you in the high positive zone. But then you do have to obviously build in that time so that you can recover. If you just keep going all the time, eventually you are going to crash. And like I said, the less you understand your why, the more you tend towards that high negative zone. That's where people get stuck living like a firefighter. This is where emergency scan modality comes from. David Allen and getting things done, where you're living like a firefighter, you're scanning the horizon for the next fire to put out. You can't focus on any one thing for very long because you just know there's going to be something that you've got to deal with, and you just got to put out the fires as fast as you can. Okay, but you can't stay here forever. The more time you spend in this high negative energy zone, the more likely you are to fall into that low negative energy zone. And this is where you burn out. You say, well, I guess it wasn't meant to be. You give up on your dreams, you settle, you compromise on your vision.
Yeah. And one thing I've found is I used to think of myself as somebody who actually thrives in that survival zone. Like, oh, you know, everything's in pressure mode. You know, I thrive under pressure. I'll just bust out this. Or, you know, back in my school days, it would be, oh, you know, an exam's coming, or an essay is due that I've had forever to, a paper is due that I've had forever to write, and I'm just gonna, you know, crush it at the last minute. And, you know, some of us do thrive on that, and some of us use it as a badge of honor. I certainly did. But if I think back on it now, had I been a bit smarter about how smarter is not the right word, but if I had been a bit more strategic and aware of how this all works, I probably could have done a lot better job managing my energy and not trying to do it all in that high negative zone. And there are times I can think for sure where that led me into the low negative burnout zone.
Smarter is totally the right word. because what happens in that situation is that your why hasn't been developed enough. When we were talking about updating the course, I literally just recorded some audio on this very topic. We talk about how people are deadline driven, but the reason that you're deadline driven, maybe you're in a job where that's just the way things are. So I'm gonna preface this by saying that those situations where there's nothing you can do about it, I'm not speaking to that. I'm talking about the personal stuff that you have control over. You have control over when you get the syllabus at the beginning of the semester. You have control over when you start that paper. You don't have to wait until the night before. And the fact that you do, it creates so much more stress. And that stress is unnecessary, but you go through it because you haven't developed a strong enough why. And a lot of people will talk in that video that we recorded the audio for. A lot of people will pursue the alleviation of pain rather than the pleasure. So they'll look to alleviate something bad rather than create something good. And so when you're a student, because I used to do the same thing, when my dad has a saying that when pain is sufficient, change will come. If you never learn to get out of the emergency scan modality, if you never learn to escape the pain, you can never really work on the things that are good. It comes back to that the important versus urgent, the quadrant that we've talked about a lot. You'll never get to the things that are important but not urgent as long as you're dealing with the things that are urgent, whether they're important or not. You have to make that mental shift. And I think that like just about everybody that I've come in contact with in the productivity space, they've learned that same thing, but they've always had to figure it out for themselves. They've always had to get to that point where the pain was sufficient that they're just like, I can't do this anymore. Something's got to change.
Yeah. And it's a great point about a misaligned why as well, because if I think back on it, again, using that school example, but I'm sure there's lots of work examples that people will think about when I discuss this, is I think in that case, my why was to pass the test. And so because of that, going to that high negative zone is what the action I chose to pass the test. And it, you know, usually worked. I would get good marks and that was fine. But because my why was misaligned in the sense that it was to pass the test or to get a good mark on this paper, the why wasn't to learn and to, you know, have this information that will help me later in life. It wasn't a smarter why. You know, I'd crush it and get a great mark on the test, but the second I put my pencil down, I'd forget everything. So again, it's a misaligned why. So that's a great point.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, why do you want to do well on the class? It's probably not because when you're 20 years old that you understand that you're going to end up using this stuff over and over and over again. And you probably have the exact opposite thought of, when am I ever going to use this? But you want to pass the test. You want to get a decent grade so that, you know, you keep your scholarship or you don't drop out of school or whatever to avoid the negative scenario. And maybe after college, it's so you don't get fired. Like a lot of people get stuck there. And that's a really dangerous place, because that's when you give up on your dreams. You say things like, I guess it just wasn't realistic. Turns out I can't do that thing, because you're so stuck living like that firefighter, being deadline driven, that you can never shift the focus towards the things that are going to take you to your ideal future. And there's a quote that I put in the show notes here from Todd Henry from the book Die Empty that was really sobering when I read it and really impacted me. He said, the most valuable land in the world is the graveyard, because in the graveyard I buried all of the unwritten novels, the never launched businesses, the unreconciled relationships, and all the other things that people thought, I'll get around to that tomorrow. One day, however, their tomorrows ran out. And that's why this whole topic of energy management is so important. You can't change your situation overnight, but you can start today and you can move towards your ideal future. But you have to manage your energy in order to get there.
Yeah, I have to say, had I known that someday I'd be helping my kids with their homework, I definitely would have been focusing more on the learning versus the passing. So just pro tip for you youngsters listening right now.
All right. So we talked about how you don't want to get stuck going from high positive energy to high negative energy, which is always the first step. I think if you're going to take a new job, start at a new school, new season in your life, you're going to be excited about that naturally. You're going to be in that high positive state. All right. So maybe you were there a while ago. Maybe you find yourself firmly in high negative at the moment. That's okay. What we want to do is we want to recenter ourselves, and we want to strategically or intentionally switch between that high positive state and a low positive state. This is sprinting and then recovering. And doing this makes sure that you're not going to burn out and that you are able to stay focused on your big, hairy, audacious goal. All of those things that we just mentioned from the Todd Henry quote, all of those quote-unquote side hustles, those things that are in your heart, those dreams that you want to do at some point, those things are possible as long as you employ this tactic.
One thing that was interesting, you mentioned the power of full engagement earlier. One thing I thought that was interesting about that is they talk about this, and they talk about that need to sprint and recover. And they were saying, you know, if you're really focusing, if you're really on something, you should go for, say, about 90 minutes, 90 to 120 minutes, and then make sure you recover. And that kind of lines up with what we talk about with the Pomodoro technique and that sort of thing, yep. you know, doing those 25-minute blocks and then every, I think, four Pomodoros taking a longer break. So it's interesting how this stuff all lines up, even though people come at it from different directions.
Yep, exactly. And I would say that the Pomodoro method is actually a better place to start because 25 minutes is more manageable.
Yep.
But no matter where you are in your day, no matter if you have the ability to implement the Pomodoro method in your work or not, there are some things that you can do to make sure that you stay on the positive side of this energy management diagram. And that's important. We're going to talk about those in just a bit. But this is going to make sure that you always have the energy to direct at that most important project, no matter how much time you think you have or you don't have. And at this point, you might be thinking, you make it sound so simple. How do I actually do that? So we're going to get into some tips for making that shift to the positive end of the energy quadrant. And the first tip that I want to share is to practice gratitude. Now, I've heard it said, and I believe this from my own personal experience, but I don't have any scientific data to back this up, but I've read that it is physically impossible to stay in a negative mood if you are expressing gratitude for the things that you have. And I have seen this in my own life with my wife. We have implemented this gratitude practice into our family meetings, and it instantly changes the atmosphere. For people who are married or have a relationship with a significant other, you completely understand that the people closest to you can cause you the most joy, but also can cause you the most pain. And that's not on them, that's on you. Because it's only if you let them, and often we do it to ourselves by projecting, because we judge other people by their actions, but we judge ourselves by our intentions. All right. So for example, your significant other does something that you don't like. Suddenly you're thinking, they don't love me anymore. That's not true. Okay. But you're looking at the action, not the intention. So expressing gratitude to them and for them will instantly defuse those negative thoughts and get you back into the positive half of this energy quadrant.
Yeah, and like we were saying earlier, energy does not only mean physical energy. All the stuff in your personal life can impact energy as well. It's funny that you say that about the gratitude, and this kind of goes back to that Todd Henry quote you did earlier. Is in a recent podcast episode, TPS 173, I think the AE Gift Guide, Tan was talking about his most gifted book, which is called 30 Lessons for Living: Tried and True Advice from the Wisest Americans. So I started reading it, even though I'm not American, but I figure what the heck. And it just so happened, just this morning, I was reading a section on this topic of practicing gratitude, and the premise behind the book is he interviews thousands of senior citizens and distills kind of these 30 lessons that he learns from talking to basically the people who have been there and done that, and distills some life lessons out of it. And one of them is to basically, whatever it is that you feel that you should say, you really should say it, because you just never know what's going to happen. And just this morning I read, and it says, the quote said from one of the seniors, says, "Who knows why it's so hard, even in the closest relationships, to say what needs to be said before it's too late. It may be complacency or people's natural reticence, or the fact that some relationships develop topics that are off limits, but few experts," by experts he means the seniors, he calls them experts, "were more grateful than those who had managed to say what needed to be said while there's still time." So also say, introducing this gratitude practice is a in your work or in your at home is a great idea. This is something that we do at Agent Efficiency. When we finish some of our meetings, we have what's called a round table of gratitude, where everybody on the team goes around and says something that they're grateful for, usually something another member of the team. And when we had some had dinner with some Agent Efficiency members of the Agent Efficiency community in Austin recently, we did this at a group dinner that we had, where everyone went around the table and expressed gratitude. And that was just one of my best working experiences ever, was participating and being there for that. So this stuff can be really useful and powerful. And you definitely, when you finish that round table of gratitude, you're ready to run through a wall again, because it's just gives you this great feeling.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is definitely Asian Efficiency is the place that I heard about this too. So I'm glad that you brought that up, where we do this in our own meetings, because I saw the effect that it had in our meetings and I was like, I want this in my family. So absolutely, you can apply this concept to just about anything. And that roundtable of gratitude around the mastermind dinner table was definitely pretty cool. And what was interesting about that was it was a bunch of people who maybe, you know, you've chatted with these people in the dojo Slack or something, but people that I'd never met before. And when you share gratitude, I think part of it also is just sharing a meal, like being in the same place with those people. In some ways, it's kind of vulnerable. Like it makes you kind of vulnerable, but also it builds trust. So if you want to be an effective team, like you have to be able to trust your teammates, and gratitude definitely helps you do that. The second thing on the list here, somewhat related, I would say, is the practice of meditation, which is something that I have gotten into this year and has made a huge difference in my own life. Now, there's definitely different versions of meditation, and I was skeptical at first. What got me into this was reading a book called 10% Happier by Dan Harris, and he shares his story. He was a major evening news anchor, and he had a mental breakdown on live TV. And he basically was like, I need to figure out how to fix this. And so he went all in with meditation, even like jumped into like a 3-day silent retreat, which I don't think I'm ready for that. But the way that I employ this is just using, there's a couple different meditation apps. In fact, Calm, C-A-L-M, website is calm.com. That was recently named Apple's app of the year. And they've got a subscription plan for that. I think it's like $50 a year. The one that I use now is called Headspace. So it's there's apps for all the different platforms, and you can sign up for a subscription. There's another one that I've seen. It's called Meditation Studio. If you don't want the subscription, it's just a couple of bucks, and then you can download the different guided meditations to your app. And then really the great thing about meditation is that it doesn't matter how good you are at it. You just have to go through the process, because your mind may wander, and that's completely okay. You just bring it back. But you practice bringing it back, and then what that does is it increases your capacity for mindfulness. And mindfulness is important for recognizing what's happening in the state that you're currently in. So meditation, I think, for me anyways, it's one of the ingredients that helps me focus on gratitude and the things that I have to be grateful for. And it gets you out of this perspective where like, oh my gosh, everything is going wrong. Because if you're really honest with yourself, everything is not going wrong. That's just your worldview at that particular time, because you're maybe in the high negative energy zone.
Yeah, I read this quote, and it's always attributed to different people like Gandhi and that sort of thing, and it's always changed. But basically, the quote is something like, you should sit in meditation for 20 minutes a day. Unless you're too busy, then you should sit for an hour. So that kind of shows you that meditation can really help you reset and go into that higher kind of energy zone, because it will help that hit you that reset button. It can be a good transition point. I believe it's Tim Ferriss who is saying that he meditates in the morning, and when he can, he meditates in the afternoon as well, because it's helpful to reset, and then he can get on and do more in the evening hours as well.
Yeah, exactly. I think you meant that it moves you towards the positive energy.
Oh yeah, sorry. Because, yes, thank you.
Because I think meditation is in the practice, what it does is it forces you into the low positive zone.
Right, yeah.
So if you're having trouble staying on the right side of the energy quadrant, and you're trying to go back and forth between high positive and low positive, if you've been in high positive for a while and you know that there's going to be a danger here to slip into survival zone, that's the time to pull out the app and meditate for a couple of minutes, because it forces you into that low positive zone where you can recover and refocus.
Yeah, thanks for that clarification. Exactly.
I knew what you meant. I just wanted to make sure everybody else did. All right. Number three is get accountable. So if you get around other people who can call you out when you are being negative, That can be really powerful. My wife does this to me all the time, by the way. She, and I do it to her too, but that's one of the powerful things about having people who can hold you accountable is they can see your blind spots and they can say, hey, you know, you're kind of acting like a jerk right now. Why are you doing that? And you can say, oh, you're right. You know, this thing happened at work and I'm not responding correctly. Let me just take a few minutes here to meditate and refocus. Like that actually happens. At one point, you know, when right after we had our little girl, you know, I was home for a couple of weeks, took some time off of work, but I haven't shared the whole story, I think, on the podcast, but our fifth child, a little girl named Adelaide, she had a little bit of trouble getting here. And so by the time we had her, my wife and I were both pretty stressed out, pretty exhausted. And so it took a little bit of time to adjust. There was one point where I was home and my wife was home and I noticed that the way she was responding to a particular situation, that it wasn't really her. And so I've been telling her about the power of meditation at that point. I downloaded the app on her phone. I pulled up specifically a meditation for new parents. And I'm like, here, just listen to this for 5 minutes. Come back and then we'll reevaluate. You know, and she gets done and I'm like, better? She's like, better. It's like one of those Snickers commercials. Nice. You know?
Different type of hangry.
Exactly.
Nice.
You have any examples you want to share regarding getting accountable?
Almost counter example, and this maybe can lead us to the next point as well, is it's funny, we work, and this was certainly the case when I was working in a physical office, is you have these coworkers where it's really fun, but not in a productive way. You go walk for coffee or something like that, and you just complain about everything, like, oh, this manager, oh, this department, you know, blah, blah, blah. And you get these negative people who kind of send you down that negative spiral, and then you get back to the office and the last thing you feel like doing is taking positive action. But at the same time, sometimes you have these people, and I've certainly had them in my work, where you know you might start going, oh, you know, so and so in this department, you know, can you believe those jerks? And then they say, well, you know, you should consider this, should consider that, and maybe this is a more productive way to do it. And just having those conversations and those people around you can really help flip things around. So I bet a lot of listeners have had those type of people. They're worth their weight in gold in an organization, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So just to crystallize this, number four, like you said, is hang around positive people. I think we talked last episode about the sports radio.
Yes.
That's a perfect example. Yeah, yes. of this. You know, you think it maybe doesn't impact you that much, but especially, like I mentioned, I'm near Green Bay, Wisconsin, which is a small town. But the Green Bay Packers are there, and everybody is just nuts about the Packers. They could win by 30 points, and they're going to still get people on sports radio who are, you know, they'll call in and be like, yeah, the coach should be fired because he made this stupid decision. Same principle. And if you hear that, you know, during your 15, 20 minute commute, like, what sort of state do you think you're going to be in when you walk through the door? A quick way that you can fix that is to listen to podcasts or audiobooks or something that's going to build you up instead of those things that are kind of detrimental and going to tear you down. There's a saying, we've mentioned it over and over again, you are the average of the five people you spend the most time with. If you hang around with positive people, it's hard to stay negative, and vice versa. If you hang around with negative people, it's hard to stay positive. But you get to choose which voices you're going to let speak into your life, and this is why the dojo is so awesome. And this was really crystallized for me when we had the mastermind, because I met a lot of these people who I see them in the dojo chat, the Lisas, the Nates, and you get around these people, and they are positive. The positive, happy people, but not fake, if that makes any sense.
Yes.
Like, you want to get around these people who are going to encourage you to become a better version of yourself and take action on your goals. And you may work in an environment where everything around you is negative and you know, backbiting and the boss is an idiot. Like you can, in the middle of your day, because I know that there's some people who are in the chat right now, they're listening to this as we record this. Like you can create for yourself a mental escape from that sort of stuff. And with the technology that we have available to us today, it's become easier and easier to surround yourself with the right people.
Yeah, Katie in the dojo just said that a couple of people have started an accountability group and doing weekly calls and that sort of thing. And those are the types of things that can be really, really powerful, is finding people who, and it could be totally different. You know, it could be people who do different. It doesn't have to be people doing the same things. This is what I think some people feel like, oh, I don't know anybody who's doing what I'm doing, so it's hard. But it doesn't need to be people who are doing the same thing you are. In fact, it could be, it's almost better if it's not. Just having that positive reinforcement and having people who are lifting you up instead of pulling you down is super powerful. So I'm really excited to see that some people have kind of started doing that organically.
Yeah, that's awesome. So we've talked a lot about gratitude in this particular episode. I thought maybe we could end this with some examples of gratitude. So we're going to give a podcast example, and then we both got a personal example. All right. So as I'm thinking about this from the Asian efficiency brand perspective, and as the productivity show, we are thankful for the dojo members who are listening live right now and who have contributed to this episode. There is a really long list of messages in my Slack channel right now, and I love the conversation that's happening there. The quality of this podcast is greatly improved because of you all. So thank you so much for spending your time with us. And we're also really thankful for the people who are listening to this episode after it's released, because without you, the listeners, this is just a fun conversation. But you show up and you download the show every week, and we're actually on the cusp of 4 million downloads. We'll probably hit that by the time this goes live. So thank you to everybody who listens to this. And if there's anything you want us to cover or questions that you want answered, please send us a tweet with the hashtag AskTPS. We'll answer your questions on the show. And I will also, we don't do this very often, but I will ask for a favor that if you enjoy the show and you get a lot out of it, please go give the podcast a rating and a review in iTunes, or give it a star in Overcast, because it's going to help us out and help other people find the show. Me personally, I am grateful for the opportunity to help other people and the platform that the podcast and Asian Efficiency gives me to do that. I've talked a lot about how much I love our core values. And honestly, it just feels really good to work for a company that's focused on helping people make the most of their time, attention, energy, and focus, like we talk about here on the podcast. I'm also thankful for my family, especially my baby daughter, who had a little bit of an adventure getting here, but both she and mom are perfectly healthy, doing great. So as I reflect on these sorts of things, I have a lot to be thankful for.
Nice. Well, I'm grateful. You mentioned the podcast. I'm grateful for the amazing listeners that the podcast has, and how smart and engaged everyone is. It's a really wonderful experience when I'm at a conference or something like that, and I meet somebody who listens. It's always really fantastic. So thank you so much. This is kind of inside baseball, but I'm also thankful for the team here at Asian Efficiency. This is behind the scenes, but we've grown a lot in the last few months with some new team members, and it's been really, really fun to get to know everyone. Hopefully we can have more of them on the podcast too someday. It's been fun because now Mike and Tan and I are very much in the minority as far as gender goes. So we're the only three dudes on the team. So that's been a fun dynamic as well. And I guess since you mentioned them, I have to be thankful for my family too, since you said that. So yeah, they're all right. No, I'm just kidding.
We mentioned in this episode that you are the average of the five people you spend the most time with, which is an extremely powerful idea that extends beyond your attitude. It applies to your personal and professional success as well. If you want to be successful, it's much easier if you surround yourself with other people who are successful. And if those people are supportive of your goals and willing to hold you accountable for reaching them, then actually achieving what you've set out to do becomes much, much easier. So if you want to connect with like-minded achievers who can help you by sharing the latest productivity tips and techniques while encouraging you and holding you accountable for reaching your goals, then the Dojo is the place for you. The Dojo is our online productivity community, which also gets you access to an ever-growing private video training library. There are new video modules every month, And you also get access to a private forum with some great workflows and an invite to a private Slack team where you get direct access to myself, Brooks, and the rest of the Asian Deficiency team. And the best part is that you can get all of this for just $1 for your first month by going to theproductivityshow.com/dojo. Now, this is a special offer just for podcast listeners. So if you want to check out everything the dojo has to offer for an entire month for only $1, you have to go to theproductivityshow.com/dojo. You'll get an email when your trial period is almost up. And if you decide to stay on, it's just $29 a month after that. You can cancel at any time. So if you want to join a community that can help you achieve your goals faster than you ever thought possible, check out the dojo today by going to theproductivityshow.com/dojo. Again, that URL is theproductivityshow.com/dojo. You can find links to everything that we discussed today in the show notes by going to theproductivityshow.com/175. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next Productive Monday.